Former Congresswoman Corrine Brown goes on trial. We'll have a preview just ahead on the show this morning. And good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app, listen anytime, or get the podcast on iTunes. You can also stream the show live right now on our Facebook page. Just ahead, jury selection continues today in the federal fraud trial of former Congresswoman Corrine Brown. What are your thoughts and questions? 549-2937. Then later, why seniors are worried about how medical care reform changes might affect Medicare. We'll speak with the AARP, and it's the Great Electric Giveaway, literally helping people on the First Coast in need keep the lights on. We'll tell you about that, all of that and more ahead. But first this hour, 21 potential jurors were excused Monday in the federal trial of former North Florida Congresswoman Corrine Brown. After nearly 25 years in Congress, Brown, of course, has her share of supporters and detractors, many who said they didn't believe they could separate those feelings out to objectively judge Brown solely by the evidence presented in court. Brown's federal fraud trial is expected to get underway tomorrow. She's accused of enriching herself with money from a bogus charity, One Door for Education. The trial is expected to last several weeks. Nate Monroe, reporter for the Florida Times-Union, is covering the trial of former Congresswoman Corrine Brown, and he joins us now in studio. Nate, good to see you. Good morning.
Hey there.
Thanks for being with us. And what are your questions and comments as former Representative Corrine Brown faces federal fraud charges in court in Jacksonville this week? We'll go to your calls in a little bit at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on our Facebook page. So as jury selection gets underway, of course, both the defense and the prosecution will try to knock out jurors they don't like. And how is that going so far, Nate?
Well, so they'll start that process today. What you saw yesterday was a pool of 65 jurors that get called in. And a magistrate judge gets to first comb through that pool of applicants to say, who has a substantive problem? Who can we weed out before we get to the point where the prosecution and defense start to weed people out? Mm-hmm. Both sides will start doing that today. The defense gets to weed out 10 people. The government gets to weed out 6. And neither side can object. That's sort of their right to do that.
This, I would think, jury selection would be much more difficult than usual with a high-profile figure like Congresswoman Brown, who has trod such a huge path across this community for decades. Tough job.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you saw yesterday was sort of the result of that, right? Like the result of having a high-profile member of Congress on a sort of high-profile trial. There were several people who told the judge, look, like, I've already got a pretty hardened opinion here. I've heard enough about the case. I know she's guilty, or gosh, there's something, you know, I just feel like she's innocent. And again, that's, you know, hopefully this process weeds those people out. But, you know, you're right. That's the end of the day. I mean, Corrine Brown has, in addition to being sort of a towering figure in politics, she's also been very,
she's a polarizing figure too. Yeah.
And she's never shied away from that sort of irreverent streak that her supporters really like and that her detractors very much hate.
And we'll go to your calls on the trial of Corrine Brown in a moment at 549-2937. So how will the prosecution try to make this case?
Well, it's important to keep in mind that there are really two things here that Corrine needs to worry about. And the first is the One Door for Education story, which we're all familiar with, sham nonprofit that prosecutors say she enriched herself with. The other prong to their prosecution involves tax fraud allegations. And these are basically saying that she didn't disclose her income for several years, that she fabricated charitable contributions to churches and schools and nonprofits. And to prove their case, I mean, they're going to walk through an exhaustive list of exhibits. You know, they've got bank records for Corrine. They've got bank records for the sham nonprofit. You know, they're going to talk to FBI forensic auditors. They're going to talk to, of course, a long list of witnesses. What you're going to see is a very thorough case. I mean, their exhibit list is like, you know, 48 pages or something. I mean, there's, it's going to be a long case.
And so the defense's job, in addition to knocking holes in the prosecution's case, is bringing forth some really stout character witnesses, high profile people expected to vouch for Corinne Brown. Who might some of those be?
So she indicated on her list, and it's important to keep in mind that, you know, that neither side will probably end up calling everyone on their list, but former Mayor John Delaney is on the list. She's got three members of Congress, Sheila Jackson Lee from Texas, Benny Thompson from Mississippi, and Marsha Fudge from Ohio. Jesse Jackson, Martin Luther King III, who has been with her throughout some of her troubles here recently. I guess the plan there is to have these people testify to what a hard worker she was.
And how else do you see the defense trying to exonerate Corinne Brown, or at least keep her out of prison?
From what she has said publicly, it seems that she is going to argue that she was so involved with her work that her chief of staff and Ronnie Simmons and Simmons's girlfriend, who is the president of the sham nonprofit, basically ran a scam with her involved without her knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so she's going to be asking the jury, and this is tricky, she's going to ask the jury to believe two things. One is that she is this very influential member of Congress who is very involved and did all these great things, but also that she sort of displayed a kind of a remarkable lack of disengagement with aspects of her personal and professional life. Like, she's not responsible for money going into and coming out of her bank account, for example, or that she is not responsible for her office's affiliation with a sham nonprofit, that she used the entity Corinne Brown helped raise money for One Door for Education. And that's going to be a complicated thing for her to do.
Okay. Say, though, that there is no smoking gun proving that Corinne Brown had knowledge of how money was being funneled improperly. Mm-hmm. Then it's a high bar, isn't it, for the prosecution?
Absolutely. It definitely is a high bar. And, you know, that's why we have trials. But again, you know, remember, inoculating herself against the charges on One Door is like, her job's not done, right? She also faces tax fraud charges, and these are fairly straightforward allegations. These are, look, your income is X, but you reported Y for all of these years, or, you know, you donated a chair that you said was worth $1,000. Like, these are, and that's also, I mean, there's real weight behind those charges too.
All right, lots of calls and tweets, emails, Facebook comments for the Times Union's Nate Monroe as we talk about the federal fraud trial of Congresswoman or former Congresswoman Corinne Brown. 549-2937. Let's go to Troy in Jacksonville. Hey, Troy, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
That's great. The first thing I want to say is that we certainly wish Corinne Brown good luck in her trial, her crucible. But I think that this is a well-planned, orchestrated effort to destroy her credibility. It's very interesting that when she began to go for her bid to be reelected, all of this came up. This came up before the reelection or during the reelection, as to put a disparaging light on her character. And, of course, it certainly influenced the outcome of the election and the redistricting thing that was the gerrymandering that took place. This was a concerted effort statewide and local to destroy her. And I think that people can see through that. But now that we've got to go through this litigation, she's tied up in the system. Now, we certainly hope that she can project a good defense, and of course we have to look at that. We have to look at all things. We have to look at the nature of politics in America. There's no honest politician that has ever been in America. So this is what we have to look at. Jacksonville is a very peculiar city. It's a city that's based in witchcraft and a lot of evil. And this is a very evil
witchcraft
state.
What do you mean?
Well, there are things that go on in Jacksonville that are concertedly evil.
Like what? Like what?
Well, we have a problem in Jacksonville. I think you remember the last time I told you when I was on the air that Jacksonville could have a tragedy with the bridge, with the Matthews Bridge. You remember a week later, about 5 days later, a ship ran into the bridge? You remember that, don't you?
I do. Did you? Are you saying that you predicted that, Troy?
It happened, didn't it?
All right. Thanks for the call, Troy. I appreciate the call. Okay. Thanks. And by the way, the number to call us is 549-2937. Okay. What about that caller's point of view, Troy, seeing that this is a witch hunt, that the evil forces are out to get Corrine Brown? And certainly there are plenty of other of her former constituents, Nate, who agree.
Yeah, I mean, I'll stick to the sort of earthly concerns, the caller's point. Yes, I do suspect that a lot of Corrine's supporters feel the same way, and she has said as much in the run-up to the trial, that she feels like this was a political witch hunt. You know, she had this big lawsuit last year challenging the way that her district had been redrawn, and she felt like this was retribution for that. I will say, as a counterpoint, the Obama Justice Department originated this investigation. And, you know, I can say as a newspaper, long before she was indicted, long before the federal government had said anything about these charges, I mean, we found out about One Door for Education. I mean, these are not made up. A lot of the facts in this case are not made up. Whether she is guilty of any crime is for a trial to decide. But the fact that One Door for Education was a sham nonprofit, the fact that Corrine Brown as a brand, as an entity, was involved in it, and that entity and that affiliation helped that sham nonprofit raise money, and that money benefited Corrine Brown, those are facts. Those are things we found long before the prosecution, long before she was indicted. And so there is some, you know, it's not entirely political.
Right. And certainly the facts will tell the tale in court, and we'll continue to follow it. At the same time, it's fascinating to see the division in this community, which is no different than the division we're seeing in this country. And you can look at it through the prism of Corrine Brown's career in Congress. From her point of view, she had to, for decades, fight overwhelming institutional racism to get as far as she got. She saw the redrawing of her district as an attempt to force one of the first female African-American members of Congress out of office. From the point of view of other people, she had ethical concerns, and the district is now held by another African-American Democrat. They don't see these charges of racism as sticking. But the perceptions that people hold are so powerful, Nate, that there's truly no objective way, I think, for most people to look at this.
Sure. I mean, and you're right. We do live in a polarized time. And I suspect that the trial will be a pretty, exhaustive affair, and we should get some pretty good solid answers out of it.
Let's go now to, and by the way, the number to call us as we talk about the trial of Corrine Brown is 549-2937. Steve in Ponte Vedra Beach. Hey, Steve, good morning.
Hello, good morning, everybody.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I just called in, but listening to the show, there is no doubt in my mind. She broke the law 22 times, at least. She's been charged, and these are facts. And there's no way to whitewash it or smooth it over. If you break the law in this country, there's repercussions. You know, you're going to wind up on trial, you're going to go to jail. And what's interesting is how they're rallying different people in different aspects to come to her aid and say, well, because she's been doing this 20, 30 years, we got to give her a break on this and this and that. Well, it doesn't work that way. You break the law, you've been charged with, I guess, 22 felonies, something like that. Anyone else, this would be a non-issue, right? They're going to jail. In this case, people are looking at things from different angles, and it's obvious to me. And what I told the screener, you know, if you want to dance all night, you're going to pay the piper in the morning. And that's what I think about Corrine Brown.
Steve, thanks for the call. Did you look at all, Nate, in examining this long saga, how this might compare to other corruption trials other members of Congress have faced over the years? Because certainly there's no shortage of those.
Right. You know, the charges that she faces, mail and wire fraud, are pretty common charges in corruption trials because they involve using, you know, basically the mail system to further a fraud. And that those are dangerous charges if you're a public official. I haven't seen a recent case quite like Corinne's.
So you see this as kind of unique then?
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I would just say, I haven't seen any recent ones. What I would say too is that, you know, in sort of the, if you take like a, you know, Sopranos view of how corruption trials open up, like this is not some complicated, this isn't a complicated case where you're asking people to, you know, follow some kind of allegations about bid rigging or kickbacks from contractors. I mean, this is in some respects, and this is what makes, I think, the government's case a bit formidable, is it's all pretty straightforward. This is not a complicated story. It's also not particularly salacious. I mean, it's just a nonprofit, you know, a sham nonprofit. You know, Corinne may or may not have helped raise money, or at least knew or didn't know she was doing it. You know, very little of that money actually went to a charitable purpose.
David is in Mandarin this morning. Hey, David, good morning to you. What do you think?
Well, it seems to me like she's pretty much unquestionably guilty, but I would kind of like to hear more about Troy and the witchcraft, if that's possible.
Yeah, you know what? I appreciate that. In fact, we're getting a lot of tweets about Troy's call and people demanding that he call every single day. So, Troy, if you're still out there, we appreciate the call. More people are interested in that right now than Nate's incredibly intelligent analysis of this trial.
I apologize.
it's just testament to the fact that, as he pointed out, Jacksonville's political culture is peculiar, interesting, different, full of nuances and, you know.
Absolutely.
I think his call just is one example of that.
Of course. And I think Corinne is a big driver of why Jacksonville's politics have been so, you know, interesting over the last several decades. I mean, you're looking at someone who is basically the titular head of the Democratic Party for a long time. A lot of her, you know, sort of more colorful, kind of garish episodes, or not, you know, we can all remember that. She certainly has had a string of controversy followers. She's also had a lot of, she can point to a lot of accomplishments. And
the slogan Corinne delivers was not an empty slogan.
Right. And as we've talked about before, I mean, she has a deep well of support because of that. You know, Republicans have helped her through the years just as much as Democrats have.
People also tend to go to their partisan corners, Nate, when we talk about this. I'll just read you a couple of comments that are coming in on social media. Paula tweets the show, Corinne Brown's slush fund differs from 45's Trump Foundation. How? So you see this partisanship coming into play when, say, a high-profile Democrat is accused, this whataboutism. Well, what about the Republican who did this? Mm-hmm. And vice versa.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, Republicans get charged with federal crimes, and Democrats do as well. You know, there probably is a larger conversation that can be had about, you know, to that commenter's point, you know, with like the Trump administration, these sort of allegations of ethical problems. I remember when we were looking into this case early on, we had an expert in federal campaign finance tell us that, you know, these political action committees, these are legal, but they're essentially slush funds, right? Like they're illegal slush funds. And what is the difference between that and, you know, what we have with Corinne?
And the difference is the way that it was set up.
Well, the difference is the way the laws are written.
The way the laws are written.
Yeah.
Sure. PJ in Jacksonville. Oh, actually, no. Let's go to Tracy in Mandarin. Hi, Tracy.
Hi. Good morning.
Go ahead.
You know, there was two time I supported, remember her good things. But if she might be 1% guilty, 1% at fault, you know, being a congresswoman doesn't matter. Richard Nixon was a president. So being a president, he did something. So judge will do the justice and juror knows that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so as you mentioned at the top of the hour, jury selection continues. The trial could go into mid-May.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, they've estimated 12 to 15 days. That could, and that's, you know, not including weekends. And it could be a little bit longer than that. It could be shorter than that. You know, we'll just have to sort of see how it plays out. But yeah, the government has a pretty thorough case planned, and the defense plans to take several days too.
He's led on the story since the beginning. The Times Union's Nate Monroe joining us. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead later. Students from Don't Miss a Beat here in Jacksonville are heading to New York to record their first album. Pretty exciting. But up next, a look at potential changes to healthcare in this country. From the point of view of AARP, what do seniors have to say? That's next.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Goodwill of North Florida. Donate, shop, jobs. Good things from North Florida with Goodwill. Proud supporters of WJCT's First Coast Connect. GoodwillJax.org for more info.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, protecting free speech on college campuses. UC Berkeley is under fire again after officials canceled and then rescheduled a lecture by Ann Coulter. Some colleges have endured violence when provocateurs come to campus. How can we have robust debate and keep students safe? Next time on 1A, weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On WJCT's radio reading service at 8 a.m. weekday mornings, it's 3 hours of news, op-eds, and obituaries from your local newspaper. Here's a call we received from someone who listens online.
I'm very happy to tell you that my daughter found the app for the radio reading service on my tablet, and I'm using that, and it's excellent. I enjoy all the programs.
If you're living with blindness and want to hear what's in the paper, go to wjct.org/radio reading, underwritten by Florida Eye Specialists.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, after failing to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, Republicans in Congress this week say they're going to try again. In fact, on Monday, President Trump said his yet-to-be-unveiled health care plan will cause premiums to, in his words, start tumbling down and produce real health care, he said. In fact, he called Obamacare being in a death spiral. So what would health care reform look like if a new bill is put forth, and what do senior citizens think? We're going to find out right now about their thoughts and concerns in some respects. Justine Conley is the Jacksonville field coordinator with AARP, and she joins us now with more about health reform and more. Good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Thanks for being with us. So you've been following this whole saga closely on behalf of senior citizens, and they are too, of course. What are your thoughts about this latest move when it comes to repealing and replacing the current system, the Affordable Care Act? What's AARP's position on this?
AARP's position is that we are not for, one of the things they want to do is charge seniors five times more than what they would the average person. And so in charging five times more, you get less for your dollar. And the average senior makes about $25,000 a year. They pay already $1 in $6 for health care. And so AARP is saying that is not okay. And so we will stand with our seniors to fight and to push back, as we did before, that we want to keep Medicare strong.
You lobbied against this during the recent debate over reforming the whole system that did not pass.
Correct. We had our people doing petitions. We had thousands of calls. We went in to see our legislators. We did everything we knew with social media. And we put our almost 38 million members to work. To say this is not going to happen like this. And so it didn't come for a vote. And so we're gearing up again, and we never let down.
And it's 549-2937 to connect with Justine Conley of AARP as we look ahead to the next steps on healthcare in this country. What are your thoughts then about the continued resolve, really, to do something different than what we are doing now? Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, has come under a lot of criticism because premiums have risen for many Americans since it was enacted, including many seniors on a fixed income.
It did. And I think, like any other system, you need a chance to work out the kinks. But what it did was it did allow 20 plus million people to have health care who had pre-existing conditions, who had other ailments that needed care. So the Affordable Care Act wasn't perfect. It had a lot of work needed to be done, and it still needs to be done. But AARP's position is, what you are pushing now does not replace it in a positive direction for seniors. Mm-hmm. And so we're saying, let's keep Medicare strong, because people have paid into it their whole lives, and we want to have it there for them when they're ready to use it. Let's do some work on the system, but don't throw everything out, because it's going to affect seniors very negatively.
When you go around the area as the field director for AARP, is that the most common concern you hear from seniors, their health care costs, or are there other things that are also rising to the top?
Oh, there are all kinds of issues, and it depends on where you go and which group you're with. Affordability of housing. We hear about health issues in general. Caregiving is one of our really big signature pieces here in Jacksonville. And a lot of people are dealing with, how do I care for my ailing spouse? How do I care for my mother who lives across town or across the country? What can I do? So caregiving is another one of the big areas that we are seeing.
And in a moment, we'll talk about your big Caregivers Expo you're doing in Jacksonville on May 13th with Richard Liu of MSNBC News. But right now, let's go to your calls for Justine Conley, Jacksonville's AARP field coordinator. What are your thoughts about how health reform will affect the nation's seniors? It's 549-2937. Jerry on the north side. Hey, Jerry, good morning.
Yes, Zuri.
Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going... The Affordable Care Act, sure, President Obama, when he had that passed, he said that, yes, there are some things in it that it need to be tweaked, made better, but the Republicans want to destroy the whole thing, keep it from having credit, that of having something like that passed, that of that magnitude. And that's all it needs. Just go ahead and the things that are in it that need to be refined, refine it. But don't destroy the whole thing, because then it'd be worse than what it is today.
All right, Jerry, thanks for the call. And that's the message AARP is toting around Capitol Hill right now.
Yes.
As we saw with the recent failure of the repeal effort, once millions of Americans have a benefit or a something that they feel is of value, it's hard to take it away.
It's very hard to take it away. Not only just take it away, but don't charge me more for less insurance. And we are already in a very vulnerable place, because the average person makes about $1,300 a month. And so that's near poverty level. And so if you charge me more for health care, that's going to put me almost below poverty level and a struggle. And if there's pre-existings that you're going to affect, so it affects in a negative way.
What about Medicare, Justine? What about the argument that if we don't reform Medicare, for example, House Speaker Paul Ryan has been so vocal about this, that if we don't make painful changes to Medicare, the program won't even last for future generations. Where's AARP on the Medicare portion of this discussion?
AARP is saying you do need to look at the whole system, but don't do it on the backs of those who've paid into it their whole lives. And that sounds like what they're proposing to do. So they keep saying, let's overhaul, 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 but they're not putting forth great solutions that's going to be beneficial for those 65 and older. And for those that's in the middle, the 50 to 64-year-old, that is a whole nother issue as they are nearing that age.
And speaking of people in that age group, you want everybody to know about this because AARP is behind a pretty cool event coming up next month in Jacksonville, the 2017 Caregiver Expo. If you're a caregiver, and I know several, by the way, including some contributors to this show, including a couple of men, and I tell them, you need to get in touch with the Caregiver Coalition. Oh, I'll be fine. I'll be fine. I keep telling these guys, no, reach out for this support. Tell us about the Caregiver Expo coming up in May at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront.
One of the things that AARP has done, all subjects 50 plus, we have researched and researched and researched some more. And so this is one of the places we're expert. And so Tula Wooten, that heads the Northeast Florida Caregiver Coalition, we work in conjunction with that coalition. And so we're really excited about this. AARP has also done training and work with men caregivers. It says 2 in 5 caregivers are men. And so men need a whole different kind of support
they
system.
They do. And they're more, I've seen, they're more reluctant to ask for it.
Yes, they are very, you know, there's like, I can do this, I can do everything.
I can handle it, right.
I can handle it. But we're finding that when people are caregiving, that oftentimes the person doing the care, their health fails faster, 30% more than the person they're caring for. And so this caregiving coalition, we're going to talk about, we're going to have resources, how to get a plan, what are the things you need, what are the questions you need to ask. And if you need respite for your person you're caregiving for, we can provide respite care. We have a number that you can call because we really want it to be a day where you can get care and then go back refreshed and replenished. And so we're going to be having more than 30 different exhibitors. We're going to have all kinds of seminars. And Richard Liu is a caregiver for his father. Excuse me.
And he's an anchor on MSNBC.
And he's an anchor on MSNBC, and he's an AARP champion. And so this is what he does around the country, talking about men caregiving.
Very nice. Yeah, he'll be giving the keynote. So mark your calendar for the 2017 Caregiver Expo in Jacksonville at the Downtown Hyatt, Saturday, May 13th. Great event. And by the way, this is free.
Yes.
MyCaregiverConnection.org. Register now. And Justine Conley, Jack's Field Coordinator with AARP, thanks so much for joining us.
You are welcome. It's always my privilege.
We'll be right back.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's Modern Guide for Adulthood, Part 2. Sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
On the next Fresh Air, inside Bellevue Hospital's psychiatric prison ward, we talk with psychiatrist Elizabeth Ford. Her memoir, Sometimes Amazing Things Happen, is about her work at Bellevue treating mentally ill prisoners sent from Rikers Island Jail. She's now chief of psychiatry for Correctional Health Services in New York City. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Join WJCT at Fort Caroline Timucuan Preserve on April 29th to explore the outdoors for International Migratory Bird Day. Kids will have the opportunity to become a National Park Junior Ranger, hunt for nature treasures, win prizes, and more. Clifford the Big Red Dog will be on hand with National Park Rangers, teaching families about how to preserve existing natural habitats. This fun family event is free and runs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Go to wjct.org/events for more information.
Quick, give me the names of every state capital that include the word city. Come on, what's the holdup? I'm Ophira Eisenberg. Do you have way too much information floating around in your head? Then NPR's Ask Me Another might just be for you. It's a whole hour of puzzles, word games, and trivia. Oh, and the answers are Oklahoma City, Carson City, Jefferson City, and Salt Lake City. But you knew that, right?
Sundays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, for thousands of struggling families here on the First Coast, just keeping the lights on at home can be really tough. Impossible choices for so many families happen all the time, choosing between food, rent, or electricity. This month, DESC is trying to help. The Downtown Ecumenical Services Council. They provide groceries, clothes, financial assistance, and more to families in emergency situations. And they're launching the Great Electric Emergency, led by Commander Current and Captain Underwear. It's a fun way to raise funds for a serious problem. Right now with more, we welcome two spokespersons for DESC, Shay Hill and Teresa Bennett Hill. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you, Melissa.
Let's start with you, Shay. This is called the Great Electric Emergency, led by Commander Current. There's some superheroes on the flyer, Commander Current and Captain Underwear, which is so cute, but it's really not any kind of a joke at all. What's this all about?
These superheroes are kind of our mascots to get people excited about helping folks in our community who are really just one step or one emergency away from having their lights cut off or their houses being removed from their homes. And this is just one of the big fundraisers that we're trying to do to get people's awareness about Downtown Ecumenical Service Council. And Mellow Mushroom is doing a check for a cause tonight, all day long at all Mellow Mushrooms. If you mention the Great Electric Emergency, 10% of your bill will go towards DESC in this effort to help with electric emergency assistance and rent assistance.
And this is tonight at the Mellow Mushroom in Avondale on St. John's Avenue. Teresa, you're on the board of DESC. They serve thousands of families. Can you tell us a little bit more about how this money will be used?
Okay. Just to give you an overview of 2016, we served over 12,000 families, roughly 250 families received rent and electric assistance. So all funds used from this campaign will be directly distributed to individuals for rent and or electric assistance, and with the requirement being there being children in the home, elderly individuals in the home, or persons with disabilities in the home.
Mm-hmm. And you call it the Great Electric Emergency because there isn't really a more basic need, right, than keeping on your power at home.
Correct.
And one of the things that we're really focusing on is trying to light up homes tonight. So we're at the average cost sometimes is about $250 per home. And we're trying to light up about 160 homes tonight. So we are getting close, but we really need a little push to get to that final mark.
And these are homes that are without power right now. They've been cut off. correct?
Or they're on the verge. And Desk's staff actually works directly with local electric providers in trying to work out the account details and what we need to do in order to keep them going on for the upcoming month or any arrears that are in place.
And Desk has a long history of doing it. This isn't the first year for this, is it?
This is our third great electric emergency, but Desk itself as an organization has been serving Jacksonville and surrounding counties since 1981.
Wow. And you can go to greatelectricemergency.com for more, but tonight it's easy to support this, Shay. People just need to come out for pizza, right?
That is
where
right.
Do you want everybody to go?
Well, Avondale would be the climax of the event, but all Mellow Mushrooms. Please go out today, all day long. Any Mellow Mushroom, mention the Great Electric Emergency. Go online at thegreatelectricemergency.com. Donate generously. And don't forget to donate to your NPR station, too.
Thanks for that plug, too. So there you have it. Just go out to eat today or tonight at any Mellow Mushroom, and you will be supporting thousands of local struggling families, helping them pay for their electric and rent and more, courtesy of Desk. That's the Downtown Ecumenical Services Council. Shay and Teresa Hill, both here to tell us more. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Melissa. Have a great one.
And in a moment, a special treat, Grammy Award-winning Ulysses Owens Jr. and the talented kids with his Don't Miss a Beat. Stay with us.
Catherine Burns, one of the hosts of the Moth Radio Hour, and I hope you'll join us here on 89.9 WJCT. With true personal stories told live without notes to standing room crowds around the world, Moth stories aren't part of the disposable daily information flow. They stick with you, and you'll even find yourself retelling them. Listen Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on 89.9 WJCT.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
I'm Vince Kong, host of Redux, WJCT's weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. Tune in to catch up on the latest local stories, plus music from our after-hours programming, anytime, anywhere. Subscribe to WJCT Redux now on your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, some talented local students are headed to New York City this week to record their first album of original songs. It's all thanks to the great local organization Don't Miss a Beat. Ulysses Owens Jr. is the Don't Miss a Beat artistic director. He's also a Grammy Award-winning jazz musician, and he's here with some of the kids right here in studio. Hey, guys, good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Ulysses, it's so good to see you, along with Jordan, Brooklyn, Israel, and Kion, all going to New York. Kids, is this your first trip to New York?
No. Yes.
For some of you, it is. Oh, my gosh, how exciting is this? Okay, Ulysses, tell us all about this trip. What a trip of a lifetime for this really elite group of talented students.
It was amazing. It became an idea that my family and I had because we had taken kids to Paris probably about 3 years ago. But now we have a new group called the Don't Miss a Beat All-Stars. They're basically 12 kids who are pretty much the best within the organization who have really taken care of a lot of things we wanted them to do. They had to audition to get into this group. So I wanted them to come to New York to record their CD and perform at the Jewel Juilliard School. And I'm actually, because I know you're looking at the thing, we actually just got back.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we just got back 2 days ago. So we went last week and it was just an unbelievable time. We got to meet Reverend Al Sharpton.
Oh my gosh.
So many great people.
We got it all wrong. Yeah. So you just got back from New York. Oh,
we got
so
back
sorry.
Sunday night.
Lots of moving parts.
That's okay.
Here. Okay, so you got back Sunday night. Brooklyn, Jordan, what was it like?
It was actually pretty cool to be in New York. Uh-huh. And to see Reverend Al Sharpton and all people who have experienced the trip of New York.
It was amazing for me.
It was amazing.
Because I went to New York and we all went to Juilliard. And I love dance so much to see all the dancers and what type of environment it is and how you have to act. It's really amazing.
How about you, Israel?
My favorite part was going to Apollo, where we touched the Hope Tree on the stage before.
At the famed Apollo Theater.
Yeah.
Wow.
Amateur Night. Yeah, that was before Amateur Night. We went behind stage and we saw the wall where every celebrity that was at the Apollo stage signed it.
And Kion, what about you?
I love Times Square.
Yeah, it's fun. Excellent. So this is the cream of the crop of your kids at Don't Miss a Beat, Ulysses. Tell us a little bit more about Don't Miss a Beat.
Don't Miss a Beat is an organization that now is about 10 years old. My family and I started it when I graduated from Juilliard back in 2006. I was sort of trying to figure out what I needed to do in my life. And I didn't have any job. So I moved back to Jacksonville. I started teaching at Jacksonville University. And my family is full of a bunch of educators and people who have gone to corporate America. And we were all kind of at a crossroad, though we were in different age ranges. And we decided to form a family business. And we decided to say, hey, we want to do something for the community. And the first thing we were able to procure was a grant from the Jacksonville Children's Commission to get a summer arts camp. And my mother said, well, hey, if you do a camp, what is your idea? And I said, what if we took kids that, you know, are at risk, wouldn't have this opportunity, put them in a summer camp, and at the end, they perform a musical. And it started with that. And here we are 10 years later. We have two community arts centers. We have kids traveling all over the country. We have probably 5-6 major programs in the city of Jacksonville, and also nationally and statewide, we're being supported. So it has turned into something really, really, really powerful and very rewarding.
Excellent. And these kids got to record an album.
Yes.
So you were in the recording studio. How fun was that? Probably a little more impressive than our little studio. But what was it exciting to record?
Very exciting.
Yeah.
It was very intense, and you had to do hard work and just listen to your directors as well.
Very cool. Well, we have a special treat. You guys are going to sing a little bit for us. Is that right? Okay. What are you going to sing?
Let's do Sia Hamba.
Okay.
All right. Here they are, the elite students of Don't Miss a Beat.
Sia hamba kuko yen cuencos, 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 sia hamba kuko yen cuencos. Sia hamba kuko yen cuencos, sia hamba kuko yen cuencos, sia hamba, sia hamba kuko yen cuencos, sia hamba, sia hamba kuko yen cuencos.
Hey, clap for yourselves. Come on. Oh. I don't want to be the only one clapping. That's the only reason why I do that. You guys are amazing. Oh, it just almost brings tears to my eyes to hear these sweet, beautiful voices in the studio. Thank you so much for singing and being with us today.
Thank you for having us, Melissa.
Thanks, kids.
Thank you.
Ulysses Owens Jr., you're just doing amazing work with Don't Miss a Beat. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And that's our show today. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merschart. Michelle Corum runs the board, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app, listen anytime, or on iTunes. And next on 1A, to PC or not PC, the debate over free speech on college campuses. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.